Kevin Harlan here. Tonight at 5:30 Eastern, the NBA on Prime Crew is back as the Emirates NBA action heats up from Vegas for a thrilling semifinals doubleheader. Then on Tuesday night, December 16th at 8:30 Eastern, the last two teams standing will square off in the championship game for a shot at the cup, bragging rights, and a place in NBA history. And Prime is your exclusive home for it all. Not a Prime member? Sign up for a free 30-day trial to get started today. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/Amazon Prime for details. Don't miss the thrilling conclusion of the Emirates NBA Cup live from Las Vegas, starting with the semifinals tonight, only on Prime.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Rock. Rockt. Der neue T-Rock.
Will they find a home? Sponsored by Geico. Steve is intrigued by the paranormal.
Otherworldly spirits really make a house a home, you know?
Janice has different taste.
I'd like my house to not be haunted.
Compromise is tough, but these two won't have to compromise when they bundle home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and they could save even more. In the end, Steve and Janice found a renovated Victorian that's only haunted from 9 to 5.
Okay, wife's home. Y'all gotta bounce.
Bye, Steve.
Bundling without compromise at Geico.com.
I'm getting myself situation.
Okay,
oh,
good.
God, I'm on camera.
Where do we look?
You're going to look in that camera right there.
Well, hello.
Well, hello there.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us this week for what? The Nooner, Hump Day Nooner.
Yes.
Probably, that name will probably be changed at some point.
Oh, no, I like the name. I think it's really good. Whoever came up with it, it's a pretty smart guy.
Thank you, Jeff.
Oh, I thought it was me.
I thought it was me.
It's usually how things work around here. We all take credit for something that may or may not be that good. I'm joined by Mr. Jeff Oskey, stand-up comedian and Bob and Tom staff member. And you can ask either of us, both of us, a question, and we will do our best to answer honestly or refuse to answer at all. Chris Spangle, of course, is joining us as our moderator. Chris, how are you?
Hello. How are you today?
Good to see you.
Thank you.
And, please ask away.
First, we should probably... What would you say you do here?
I do whatever Chris Spangle tells me to do. I write for Tom and some different characters. And nothing. I don't do... Sit around, annoy people?
No, you switch during the morning?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I run the cameras in the morning, so if you have the VIP, I'm the one switching them and cut down little videos. And
all the videos that you see on YouTube and Facebook, Jeff is the one that pulls those and edits those?
Yeah.
Yes, and occasionally fills in on air, like yesterday when Chick was out sick. Yeah. Jeff joined us all morning, so.
Oh, that was fun.
Yeah, your commitment to what you do is... phenomenal.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, that's what most people say about me.
And how many weeks out of the year are you doing stand up?
this year about one night a month maybe.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, I mean you've
not as much.
Yeah, picking up this job it's certainly.
Yeah. Which by the way, this Friday and Saturday night I'll be in Dayton at the legendary Wiley's Comedy Club, one show Friday, two shows Saturday, with the hilarious Cale Forbes will be opening for me. And,
great.
It's a door deal, so come out, because
that means
no, I don't get paid.
That means when you buy a ticket, he gets a cut, which is a good thing. So definitely go.
And go if you don't buy a ticket, he continues on in poverty.
Yes. Well, last time I was at Wiley's, I got home at like midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. To realize apparently I'd forgotten to pay my electric bill. And so nothing better than coming home to a pitch black house at 1 in the morning on a Sunday.
Man.
Did a little candle lighting, and I'm like, oh, all the power must have went out on the street. And then you probably have never had your power turned off, but you walk outside to see if your neighbor's lights are on in their houses, and then you realize they are, and you probably forgot to pay your power bill.
All right, Casey wants to know, how did you go from a guest to a behind-the-scenes full-time employee?
Well, I've written for the show for 7 years now, and from home. And then Jeff Vibbert, luckily for me, decided to seek other other opportunities.
He works at Barstool Heartland. He wasn't let go.
No, no, I in no way was insinuating he was let go. He went on to bigger and better things. So I got to creep in his old spot. So, yeah.
Very good. James Hall, maybe you know this person, asks, what are some of Jeff's favorite memories from his days at Nativity? Can you explain what that is?
That's the grade school I went to is Nativity. And if that's who I think it is, that guy used to beat me up in grade school, so I'm glad he's following my career now. I went to Nativity. It was a Catholic school. One of my favorite memories was during the winter, we had a bus, but we didn't have enough kids who went to our school to use the bus to pick up kids. Does that make sense? So we just used it to go to the gym because we didn't have a gym at our grade school, and we had a bus driver / janitor named Buck, who, if you started chanting loud enough, donut, during the snowstorm, he would do donuts in the parking lot.
In the bus?
In the bus, full of children.
Wow.
For multiple times. He would do it on the bus ride at the other schools, and in today's day and age, he would have been fired immediately.
Yeah, yes.
But back then, that went on for 4 or 5 years. You prayed for snow so Buck would do some donuts on the bus with you on it.
Yikes.
Yeah. Then when he died, his son, Bucky.
Is that right?
took over, and I'm not making this up. He tried to do donuts in the bus just like his dad did and slammed it into a goalpost, a basketball goalpost, and the donut times were over.
Wow. Okay, well, Daniel wants to know, this is to both of you, is Tom really as busy as he would have us believe?
We're actually part of that. Like, as we are to believe, you know what I mean? Like, it's not just as the audience is to believe. We don't know. You know what I mean? Like, we all are told that he's as busy as he seems, but we don't know if it's real or not. He could leave here and go sit at home for 4 hours. I don't think he does, though,
because
he can't stand it.
I suspect that there is an occasional nap that takes place after the show, which I totally get, because you can attest, when you're done with the show, your head is ringing.
Yeah, yeah. And he also gets here an hour and a half at least before I do.
Yeah.
So he gets up way earlier, and he's, yeah.
We don't know what he does, because he always says, I've got to go. I'd explain.
I've got a thing.
But it's very boring.
Yeah. So that could be getting his car washed, or it could be like a very important meeting with lawyers. You know? So, yeah. Yes, I think he is that busy. Whether or not all of it is important, who knows?
He runs a big business. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
He has a lot of kids, and he's a very important man, and he's a great boss. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Absolutely.
Oh,
yeah.
The best.
What is he behind us or something?
No.
Oh.
Just in case he actually finds some time to watch this. Matt wants to know, and you can answer too, Josh, if you'd like. What is your favorite thing that you've written for the show, or the best bit that you've written?
My favorite bit is I wrote a Mr. Obvious like 4 or 5, 6 years ago that got played 2 or 3 times that I'm proud of, about a snake behind the gas oven. But it's,
oh, was it a hissing sound?
Yeah, and it turned out to be a gas leak, and the person explodes their house. I wrote that. I was proud of that, and I've had a lot of lines, you know, like where I'll punch up other people's scripts or something that get on. But that's probably my thing I'm most proud of, is that I got a Mr. Obvious made.
Yeah,
that's always. Can I say my favorite one of yours?
Sure.
Would be the Shiit.
Oh, thanks.
Yes.
It was very funny.
Thank you. Yeah. I know a lot of people, it pisses them off.
Why?
I think they find it annoying. You get tweets.
Do you think they find the bit annoying, or how often the bit is played during a particular time?
Oh, it may have been that. I mean, yeah. A lot of folks forget that they may be listening for an hour or longer, but most people are listening for 15 minutes. So,
right.
It did get played quite a bit in a short amount of time.
So, can you explain what a writer does? Because there are writers for this show, believe it or not.
I don't know if we're allowed to talk about that.
All right.
Well,
maybe not. Maybe just explain kind of what you do.
We get the news stories. We will sometimes get ahead of time to for maybe a call-in or a joke for Tom. You'll send them. We work on bits and, you'll write a ton of, that's the thing I think people don't realize with writers. You may write 100 different things and one or two things get used. Whereas, it's a lot of trial and error of just pitching and hoping something's good. And if it's not necessarily for the show, it may be something you can use in your act or in a video or something later on. But every night, I pretty much sit down for an hour to an hour and a half and work on writing call-ins or...
Such as the some other news character that's been calling in.
Yeah.
You know, he'll have four or five jokes based on the news stories that we've done.
Yeah. Which have been going over great. I've been killing them.
Now, Tom, in the mornings, becomes aware of the news stories we're going to do. Sometimes the night before, I guess, but Chick and Christy don't know about them in the morning, and I don't know about them until we do them.
Hmm.
And Chick and Christy only know them because they get them in front of them when they get here. I don't want to know any of the news we're going to do.
Which, just for the record, and I know this is kissing ass, but you're so quick. Like, I don't know. I would have sworn, and I know you aren't lying, I would have sworn you had those stories hours before and had written jokes. That's how quick you are.
I'm on the writer's email list. So they get sent to me the night before. A lot of times they get sent, though, I'm already in bed.
Right. Sure. They get sent at 2:45 in the morning.
Yeah.
We have one of the best prep staffs.
Yeah, for sure.
In the business.
But even though I get them, I refuse to look at them. And I will send Tom stories just based on a headline every now and again. Like, we did that story about the woman who got a ham and blew up a motel because... And I just saw the headline and sent it. I didn't read the story at all because I, just in case, I'm just better if jokes come to me in here as opposed to planning them out.
You're so quick. It's so, as a fellow comedian, it's really frustrating to watch how quick you are. But I'm constantly amazed by that. And that's enough of that. But I am very impressed with how quick you come up with stuff.
Chick, too. And Tom's very quick as well. It's,
yes.
But Chick, I think, just gets the sports stories.
Exactly. Yeah, he doesn't get the – and vice versa. Christy's not getting the sports stories a lot most of the time.
I've noticed in the show that you two are kind of playing off of each other a lot more. Like, you looked at him and said, how would that sound between you and Chick? I really like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, thanks. It's fun. Like, because he and I have gotten to – we've gotten to a point where we can – and he's great at picking up on something that I'm trying to lay down, too, where if I do say a creepy voice for one of the pervers we have in a story, he'll jump on with it and play along with it as well. Or we do faux sort of being angry at each other. Like, he's really Chick is one of the best comedic wingmen there is.
All right, Patrick would like to know, hello there, Josh, would you be angry if all you had to eat was a Lunchable?
Like, I mean, meaning the pack?
Yeah, just one of those little Lunchables for lunch for the rest of your life.
That's the question?
Yeah.
For the rest of my life?
Yeah,
I'd be angry. That's not...
Who
I mean, I'd be angry if it was...
I take full responsibility for asking this question in the first place.
Okay.
I apologize to the audience.
No, I just wonder, I'm trying to... That's an interesting, I mean, it's a bizarre question. Now, yeah, I think anybody would be annoyed with eating the same thing for lunch every day, no matter what it was.
How long have the two of you been comedians?
That was a smoothless transition.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. I started my first open mic in 06, but I wouldn't consider myself, in terms of getting paid, 8 years, eight or nine years. A lot of comics are like, September 3rd.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why and how do you know that? To me, it doesn't.
I had a friend who would be like, this is my 1,422nd yes. show. And you're like, I couldn't even tell you how many shows I did last no. week. Like,
dude, about how many years have you been doing it?
About the same.
Okay, yeah.
About 11. My first open mic was 11 or 12 years, but I didn't take it seriously and like start getting paid until like 8 years
yeah.
ago.
Yeah.
Probably, and I just started headlining maybe 2 or 3 years ago, smaller venue, like obviously not Funny Bones and stuff, but yeah, I would say about, I don't know if you remember this, I actually met you probably 6 or 7 years ago at some showcase at Crackers.
Hmm.
And I thought you were hilarious back then. I've always thought your stand-ups really strong.
Oh, so. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Comedy, it's one of those things where time, it's not, I don't know, it's such a weird, sometimes, I mean, you can be in it for 2 years and be good, or you can be in it for 18 and then finally get good.
Yeah.
So it's.
Or you could be in it for 2 years and get discovered, and you have a Conan, and you only have 10 minutes worth of material.
Sure.
And then
yeah,
you have
yeah.
people who have 5 hours worth of material that are amazing comics that you'll never hear of or you'll
right.
never come across on TV because they don't, you know, they don't live in New York or L.A. and they don't get seen by the right people.
Yeah.
Or,
well, I mean, yeah, Louis C.K. has been doing it for going on 30 years, but we've only known about him the last 15.
He was always one of those guys in the mid-2000s, I'd hear his name. Oh, this is the comedian that every comedian loves, but nobody outside of the comedy
right.
circles really pay attention to.
Right.
And then he just popped.
But he even admittedly was like, I was doing the same act for 20 years. And so I got to either stop
right.
or change my hat. And he ended up becoming just writing more and being prolific. So.
But would you say, I would say, I don't know if Josh will agree with me, I would say that most of the comics that you hear about or that common, you know, everyday people hear about or see on TV, most of those people have been doing it a long time and you just haven't heard of them. Or the general public hasn't heard of them. I think it's a lot less now with YouTube and there's a lot of different ways to get your product out. But a lot of times you're like, oh, that guy, you know, he's an overnight success. And it's like, he's not an overnight success. That dude's been doing it for 10, you know, like
right.
Louis C.K. or even Dave Chappelle was doing it for 10, 12 years before people who knew who Dave Chappelle was. And it's,
yeah,
it takes a lot longer. If you want to be a stand-up, it takes a lot longer than you would think.
Does. And nowadays it takes even longer to make a living at it.
Oh,
it
yeah.
used to be that you could be an MC and make a living at
oh, yeah.
it back in the 80s. And then a little later on, you know, you could make a living being a feature. Now, dude, making a living as a feature is tough.
Oh, yeah. It's well, if you have any life or family or kids, you can't.
I mean, yeah, unless your spouse is making.
Yeah, rich. And
right, yeah. You know, making essentially enough for.
Do you
the
remember
household.
How much you made? Did your first MC week?
Yeah, it was. Let's see. It was my first MC week was at the St. Louis Funny Bone, and they had nine. Let's see, a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, two Friday, three Saturday, one Sunday, and one. I'm sorry. And one Monday. So there was no Tuesday. That was the open mic night. So it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 shows at $60 a pop. Oh no, it was 30. So 9 times 30.
So is that why the
$270? Yeah.
Is that why the economics changed? Is just the demand for the amount of shows that you do had dropped so drastically?
Well, that because you know after the comedy boom of the 80s, there was a show every night, pretty much everywhere, and then it became less popular, and you know the bubble burst, as it were.
Right.
And then shows a lot of clubs now Thursday to Saturday, some Friday and Saturday only. You still get the clubs that are, you know, Tuesday to Sunday, but a lot of those Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Sunday shows are showcase local showcases, or there's some a YouTuber will come in on one of those off nights. And, yeah, but also saturation of there's just a ton of comedians. And if you say, no, I'm not going to do this for $50 a night, somebody will go, I'll do it.
I'll do it for $20 a night, exactly. And I'll drive the comics all week.
Right. So there's it's a few different things.
And then you have the folks who, Pauly Shore, I mean, but the guys who were on TV in the 90s now going out and doing stand-up.
You mean like the Trailer Park Boys who come down and do a show, sell out, make thousands of dollars.
Does that irritate you guys as a stand-up comic when you see somebody who has a name that people knew 20 years ago, and then they come in and they do a stand-up show, and take a spot for someone who's a player?
No, it doesn't irritate me at all. Are there guys out there that I think should be getting more recognition and work than they are? Of course. But of course people are going to pay to go see somebody that they saw on television 20 years ago and liked. It makes sense to me that they would want to go out, and it makes sense to me that clubs would book them. It's a business, first and foremost. So, yeah, I mean, I don't get bothered by what anybody else does on stage.
Yeah.
It's not worth it.
It's frustrating. I saw the people ahead of me, and I still see it, this guy got that, or that person. If you're every time that thought crosses your head, you should write a joke.
Exactly.
The time you're spending worrying about what Bob got and you didn't, you should be working on your act so you get it next time.
Right.
Bob doesn't.
Yeah.
I find that stuff frustrating because of that.
You're in too much control of your own career as a comedian in a sense that for you to focus on what everybody else is doing is a real detriment.
I think it's how it is in any creative industry. You do something that you love for free for a period of time, then you get paid for it, and along the way you just collect your own audience that you can make a living off of, essentially.
Right. Yep, yeah, especially these days.
Right.
Well, and I would say as a comic starting out, you don't realize that it is a business, and it is about getting butts in seats. And I don't care how funny you are, if only four people want to come and watch you, that's a problem. Like, if you can be the unfunniest person in the world, if you're great with people and you can get 200 people to come out to your show every weekend, you're going to be successful. Whether I think you're funny or the club thinks you're funny, they're going to book you because you're bringing in 200 people every show.
Right. Oh, plenty of clubs book people they don't think are funny at all. But they bring in, and that's fine. Let the audience decide.
Right. Sure. So there's a very distinct difference between the craft of stand-up and the craft of broadcasting. And especially when you're doing comedy radio and you're trying to be as broad as possible versus stand-up, you're trying to do what you think is funny and get other people to agree. How have you guys tried to navigate that different skill? I know for Jeff, especially, we do content curation, and that's much different than stand-up comedy and crafting that joke. Has there been, for you, Josh, and way in, Jeff, like a jump from being a stand-up to being a broadcaster in terms of your mindset?
Only in terms of, this is improv, and stand-up is written out, typically. So there's still some improvisation for me on stage when I do stand up, but it's the majority of it's been written out. Here, it's 99.9% improv. So, and the only reason I say it's not 100% is because we might do a news story at 8:30, and I'll think of a joke at when we're on commercial, and then I'll make that story come back so that I can get that joke out. I don't necessarily consider that improv because it's premeditated. So, at that point, it becomes premeditated. That's the only difference for me. It's a big difference, but that's the main difference.
I think you've made the transition better than... I mean, I saw a bunch of people who... they had a lot of guest hosts for a couple of years and different people come in. And I know I'm horrible about making my jokes sound conversational, or even if I have a joke, presenting it as conversational instead of as a stand-up punchline type thing. Whereas yours, that's why I was shocked when, you know, yeah, yours is just natural. Whereas I think that is a learned, you may have had it naturally, but I know I've had trouble making, I feel I'm way better on stage than I am on air. And it's because I'm way more comfortable and I'm in my element and I know that works. Whereas when I'm on air, I'm like, well, I'm about ready to say something and I'm timid about it because I'm like, well, if this doesn't work. And so then I get in my head and I just way overthink everything. And I think, yeah, if, approaching it from an improv. Do you have an improv background?
Yeah, I did it for a few years.
Oh, okay.
All right. Kelly wants to know. Let's get back to questions. Leave them in the comments section below. Kelly asks, Josh, how's the house hunting going?
Going well. Going well. Nothing absolutely confirmed yet, but I'm enjoying it. It's fun and it is stressful. But it's kind of cool to go look at a house. And I have put in some offers and they were not accepted. Waiting to hear on another one, but we'll see. Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Alex wants to know, for both of you, do you prefer video games or tabletop games if you had to decide? And if you like them, what ones do you like?
Tabletop.
Tabletop or video games?
Like tabletop board? Like ping pong? Or, yeah, do they mean tabletop arcade?
I think they mean like Monopoly or
board games.
Board games. Yeah, board games or video games.
I'd have to go tabletop games, and I'm going to include in that not only board games, but like ping pong, bubble hockey, air hockey, pool. my problem with video games is I don't have a gaming system at all. If I did, it's like what I would do. Like I feel like I would sit there for 10 hours a day and just get nothing else. So I've just sort of removed myself from it.
That's a good move. I got a used Xbox someone gave me one time and I had to get rid of it because I don't have the self-control to have a game and go to bed when I'm supposed to if I'm halfway through something. So, but I'm with you. I like pool, billiards would probably be my game of choice.
Are you good?
I used to be back when I used to hustle pool back like when I was 18, 19.
Like you legitimately hustled?
Yeah, that's what I would do for extra money on the side.
No kidding.
Yeah. I am not that good now, but my uncle used to be a pool hustler back when he was a teen.
Really?
And he kind of taught me his thing.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Jeff Oskey is an untapped resources of crazy stories.
I got a lot of.
It's the
last time I hustled was when I had a gun put to my head outside a pool hall called Sticks and Stones.
Wow!
And I had taken $500 off some guy, and he decided he wanted it back, and put a gun to my head, and I peed myself and fell on the ground and cried as he went through my pockets and laid there crying for another 45 to 50 minutes and then got up and went home and never hustled.
He said, you know what, I'm not doing that anymore. Wow.
It was a good hustle. I was so proud of myself. Oh, it was so good until I got robbed.
Oskay's been here 9-10 months, I'd say.
Yeah.
And Oskay Bailey and I meet every day after the show just to kind of coordinate what we're going to do on the web. I'd say 2 to 3 times a week he tells us a story that I don't believe that someone could possibly live through that story.
Nope. You aren't the only. I've had many a friend who later on are just like, you know what? I always thought you were full of crap, but since I was here when this happened, I believe everything else.
You're kind of our bad luck Brian.
I don't think it's bad luck.
Who's bad luck Brian?
It's the meme where it's like,
oh, that, yeah, that's why. Right.
Memes.
Josh.
Yes.
Vicky wants to know why you don't have a computer.
Ah, Vicky, I get asked this quite often. I prefer not to have one. Tom actually did get me one. It's a very nice laptop. It sits in my office. And he's cool with me not having it in here. I would just be distracted by it. So I prefer not to have it.
Michelle wants to know, to both of you, what quote or saying that people often repeat is just complete nonsense?
A couple weeks ago on air, I mentioned how you'll walk into somebody's house and it'll say, live, laugh, love. Like that means nothing. It's just, I mean, I guess it's meant to, you know, positivity, or but you might as well just have a thing that says positivity. You know, like, right. It's not, it's nothing. Live, that one bugs me.
There was a lady who I used to work for, and on her front porch, her doormat said, this house runs on Jesus and sugar. I was like, that's an interesting combination.
At least that's like somewhat folksy. You know what I mean? Like, it's, no, I'm not, I mean, I'm not saying it's the best, but it's sort of folksy. Like, it's, whereas live, laugh, love is just so generic. Like, it's, ugh.
And they have it stenciled on the wall.
You're right. Like
The worst.
If it's on canvas and sold at Meijer or Target, it's too cliche. Steven wants to know, what are some movies that are so bad you can't help but love them?
See, this is, if I love them, I don't really think they're bad. So I'll have to come up with some things that most people think are bad that I love. There's a movie called Forces of Nature with Ben Affleck and Sandra Bullock that a lot of people hate. I love it.
I've never even heard of it.
What else? Tom and I agree on this. Ishtar is, we both like Ishtar, and that's considered one of the worst flops and movies ever made.
I can't think of any.
Mine is Son-in-Law with Pauly Shore.
Yeah.
Really?
I love that movie.
It's fun. I remember, yeah. I haven't seen it in 25 years. Yeah. I remember thinking it was fun.
I liked Biodome. I remember thinking that was funny back in the day.
There's no way it is. Is there?
No, it can be now. I would hate to watch it now, but...
I like the Police Academy movies.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they're great.
That's the first time I ever saw boobies. Police Academy movie. My babysitter showed it to me. She let me watch it, and I was like, oh, boobies.
Yeah, I like those. Those have got to be, I mean, those are terrible.
Do you know the first time you saw boobies, Josh?
Boobs. In a movie?
Just in life.
I don't know. I mean, in a movie, maybe Revenge of the Nerds or something of that ilk. Because I would have been six. Would I have been six? Yeah. That was 84. So I'm going to have to say that. Live in person, besides my mom, who, because I was a baby or whatever.
Right, right.
Seems even stupid to bring up. Whose boobs did I see for the first time?
Other than your own.
I don't know. I don't know who's...
Mine was the same babysitter that showed me the movie.
Will you tell us that story, please?
Nope. All right. I will not.
Oh, that's a good one. Jacob wants to know, who would win in a fight, a gorilla or a lion?
Man. If the lion gets a hold of the gorilla's neck, it's over. You know, but if the gorilla can somehow King Kong, like, his hands into the lion's jaws or something.
Ooh, like rip the mouth.
Yeah. I'm going lion.
Yeah. I would have.
The lion, I think, knows how to kill in a more efficient manner, I think.
I'm going to say I just saw a bear beat a lion the other day on the interwebs, and
was this one of those fake, like, computer things?
No, it was a real like Bengal tiger fighting a bear out in the woods, and the Bengal tiger was twice as big as this bear, and the bear ran it off.
Wow.
And the Bengal tiger had it by the neck, and the bear still got loose, and so I'm gonna go gorilla.
Well, they can get up in the tree, you know. Yeah, they've got
they can
the aerial
grab
support.
Stuff and hit
well, yeah,
it.
But that's not a fight.
Well, I mean, not running away, but you know, you like Jackie Chan, it you run up the tree and then kind of bounce back on top of them.
I don't think gorillas do that.
All right, a couple more. Steve wants to know if you could choose one food item to be calorie-free for you, what would it be?
Man, calorie-free donuts.
Soda pop.
Final question. Alex wants to know, have you ever done comedy outside of North America, and what was the experience like, and did you have to tailor the material to that culture? We also had another question. What are the toughest audiences to do comedy in front of?
For me, college audiences are the toughest because...
Hate them.
They are so worried about being politically correct that even when I do self-deprecating humor about me being overweight, let's say, they legitimately feel like I am fat shaming myself.
Oh yeah.
And that I should feel sorry, like I that I should feel bad. And to me, that's so much more insulting than a fat joke.
Right.
The fact that they think I should feel bad. You put it perfectly. I hate them. They're not fun. They think they know everything, and they're so uptight. I can't even imagine going to college right now. I don't think I would.
I remember before my first college show, I was super excited because I was like, "Oh, I'm doing a college."
Right.
These are, you know, college kids are open minded, and they're finally away from their parents, and they're ready to expand their minds, and they're going to be free thinkers. And holy crap, I was wrong.
No, the exact opposite.
I had the exact opposite experience. It was terrible.
Yeah,
I don't enjoy it.
And the thing about it is, the money is insane. So sometimes you still do them because they, you know, I guess what is the rule that they, like, certain organizations have a certain budget, and if they don't spend it all, their budget gets cut.
Right.
So they just throw money at you, and you're like, well, this is just going to be the worst hour of my life, but at least I'll be good for 2 months.
Have you had to do the colleges where you do it during the middle of the day?
Yes.
Oh,
I had to do one in a commons, because that's the other thing too. Even if they're not in like a good, actually, there was one college show I loved, now that I think about it. But it was in a theater at night.
Oh.
And I was opening for Mike Birbiglia, and they were comedy fans. So they were but a lot of times the setup is awful. It'll be at 3 p.m. in the Commons area in front of the Subway, like Subway sandwich. And I remember doing that, and I could just hear, like, lettuce, tomato. But I got, like, $1,000 to open for somebody. Like, I did like 15 minutes. It was stupid.
Once saw Tim Kavanaugh in a tent. It was this big, you know, festival with a dozen tents. And poor Tim Kavanaugh is performing in the front of a bunch of lawn chairs, essentially. You know, those metal chairs. And it had to be miserable. Like, looking back, knowing what I know now, like, but he's such a nice guy, good sport that it work.
Yeah.
I got booked at a place called Indiana Beach, which, if you're from Indiana, you're familiar with it. If you aren't, don't go there. But I got booked 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and they had set the stage and up under the log ride. So while you were performing, like every, I don't know, minute, woo! Like everybody screaming over the
amazing
top of you, and water sloshing out onto the microphone and onto you as you're I always grab the mic, so I had to put my hands in my pockets because I was feeling a charge from the
what.
And not one person stopped to watch. They just walked by and pointed, like, "What the hell is this guy doing?" And I had to do 45 minutes.
Man.
To no crowd, just screaming above me, and then every minute or so, I'd just get hit with a slosh of water. But it paid $1,000.
So was it worth it to you? I mean,
kept my lights on.
Right, right.
So I loved
it. So crazy.
Is that the worst show you've ever done?
It's probably. It was the worst setup for a show that
that's
I've ever
so
done.
Funny.
It was on the Midway. So there's people, like, you know, throwing balls at, you know, the jugs and all that. And people are cheering, but not for me. They're
man.
It was the worst.
I did do stand-up a couple times in Korea when I taught English over there. And I did cater it to not Koreans, but to the other foreign teachers, the other Americans, Canadians, British people who were there. And
was it at a comedy club?
It was at a bar, and I was between a band played, and then I, like, they took a break, and then I did stand up.
The worst too.
Yeah, it was the first The one time I did it, one time was really good, and the other time was not good at all.
So did you take a break from stand-up to go to South Korea, or had you not really started
yet? I had done maybe three open mics before I went to stand-up. Okay. Or Korea.
Gotcha.
I had done 4 years of improv before I went to Korea, and then when I got back, I didn't do any more improv and just did stand-up.
Can I ask what the name of your improv group was?
It wasn't bad. It was City Improv.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it was like a – it was short form. We did long form shows, but it was most of the shows were short form. Like, whose line is it anyway? Fun. It was actually fun.
Nice.
All right, let's wrap up with this question from Polka Dad Justin. Swear to God, that's his name on
Poker Dad.
Polka Dad,
as in like Pokemon.
Right.
Gotcha.
Would either of you consider putting out an album?
I have, Jeff, you have.
I do have an album. Thanks for asking. It's available on iTunes. It's called Dream Killer. It's been out for 2.5 years, and I'm recording another one at the end of this year.
Do you sell more hard copies or digital copies?
Oh, hard copies.
Because you sell them at your show?
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, because this is something I'm going to be facing here. How much of your current act is on Dream Killer?
Maybe a third.
Okay, that's good.
Maybe a third of it.
Because I just recorded, and I think I am going to release an album. People might want to know why I did I record if I didn't have plans on, because I was just going to kind of release snippets or whatever. Not,
oh, like tracks.
Yeah, tracks for satellite radio. But I might actually put the album out. And if I sell it after shows in 2 months, it will be 90% of my current act. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, what I'll have to go, you just saw this, so if you liked it.
Well, a lot of people do want that, because yeah, if they enjoyed you, they're like, oh, is that one story on there? Because yeah, I want my friend to hear it. And you're like, no, it's not on there. Oh, well, that's what I wanted him to hear. Right, so I'm right, like, oh, well, I guess you're screwed.
I really get the vibe that a lot of times people enjoyed that hour that they just spent with you, and they want to support you for the joy you gave them, and that's really what it's about, less about what's on the CD and more about
it is.
Giving it to you.
It is, for sure, yeah.
I've had people come up and just give me $50 and be like, oh, you want 5 CDs? And they're like, nope, just take the $50.
Yeah, some people will tip you. Man, I saw a comic once just put out a tip jar. He didn't sell merch.
I've seen that, too.
I wonder if it was the same
I'm
person.
Not there. I'm not at
Dude,
that
Dude, that takes some gall. He went, I don't have anything to sell, but just a tip jar. And people were, you know, putting it. It was like, oh, man, I couldn't do it. Because like my merch, right now I just sell a T-shirt that says half fat, because I've got a bit about me being a half fat person. And it's like a drawing of a half fat guy or whatever. And it says, it has my social media handle. And the best is when people, A, they want to support you, and they like the merch.
Right.
It's fun.
You can see that at thatjosharnold.com.
Yeah, I still have some for sale.
All right, that's all. We're out of questions.
All right. Oh, okay, cool. Cool. Well, thanks so much, everybody. Really appreciate you taking the time to ask questions and to watch this. And if you're watching it after the live, really, thanks very much for checking it out. Jeff, thanks for joining me, man.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Check out the podcast that inspired Taylor Sheridan's latest series, Landman.
There's a stretch of road in oil rich region of West Texas. This region of West Texas, known as the Permian Basin, is in the midst of the biggest oil boom in history. This is a story of roughnecks, billionaire wildcatters, and wannabe dreamers. My name is Christian Wallace. From Texas Monthly and Imperative Entertainment, this is Boomtown.
Boomtown.
Follow and listen on your favorite platform.